Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Racing Riot podcast with myself, Joshua Stacey, and my brilliant co-host and newly wedded, Charlie Post. Massive congratulations.
Cheers, Josh. Change man, you know. So, yeah, things have all changed and all different now, and delighted to be back here in a bit of normality.
We hope this becomes your fortnightly horse racing fix, full of debate, fun and opinions regarding racing's hottest topics. But before we go on to that, we've got you a free monthly subscription to Racing Post Members Club, exclusive to Racing Riot listeners. Simply use the promo code RACINGRIOT in capitals and enjoy a free month of top content, including race replays, tracker and free access to the paper a night early. If you don't wish to continue this after the first month, make sure you cancel before the 30 days or you may be charged. But today on the show, she goes for hat-trick glory, enable bids to land a back-to-back treble in the Arc this Sunday. We speak to John Gosden's second jockey and main work rider, Rob Havlin, about her chances in what looks potentially her biggest challenge yet. Also, we're going to be touching on Pinatubo. He was mightily impressive. But before, Charlie, wedding, honeymoon in Kenya, how was that?
It was pretty epic, mate. As in, I would recommend it strongly to anyone. We actually took a busman's holiday and did 6 days initially of horse riding safari, which is like nothing else I've ever seen before. I actually, one of my greatest thrill was I managed to find you in equine form, I mean, in animal form. And it was a giraffe, mate. Oh, I mean, brilliant. It's one of the few things that I've ever met that's actually taller than you and probably moves even more slowly.
Brilliant.
Spends all day eating as well, which, like I say, the similarities were endless. In fact, I found one special one that I nicknamed Josh.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. I've actually been compared to a giraffe on multiple occasions, so I'm sort of used to it. It's not good. Also, touching on height, I think I'm now at that stage where I'm abnormally tall.
Yeah.
So I may as well just keep going.
What would the listeners love to see? I mean, you becoming the tallest man ever. I mean, that would be quite something. We really would get some hits and listens then in.
Giraffe man.
The giraffe man. Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
But it was an epic time. I mean, we did some incredible things. There was actually one moment we were watching lions about 10 metres away from us on the horses. And foolishly, I was on quite a young horse. I went to take my hands off the reins to take a picture. We had this lovely new camera we bought in the airport. We nearly missed our flight because of it. We took so long deciding about it. But we got this camera, so I'm there setting up the shot, zoomed in, ready to go. And the lion goes and bloody yawns.
Right.
And as he yawns, my horse is that panicked by what's going to happen next. He whips around from under me. I nearly dropped the brand spanking new camera. And more importantly, I nearly fell off. And I thought to myself, imagine if I had to come off, the horse had bolted, and I'd have been left there at the mercy of the lions. I mean, never mind the 4th, 5th, 100th edition of the Racing Riot podcast. It could have all been over there and then, but it would have been a groundbreaking story.
That would have been a blessing in disguise. Guess it never happened. but I think, touching on that, it's probably a good job that you've had a long career in horse riding.
Do you know what? I mean,
if that was your average Joe.
I did wonder about this. I thought about, you know, your middle-aged guy that's slightly overweight, and I mean, he'd have been a good feed for the lions as well. And I mean, but I think, to be fair, the horses were amazing. And I was actually riding one that was a bit younger, that's a bit new to the job, owing to my experience, you know. So I took it as a backhand compliment. But if he'd have buried me and I'd have been eaten by a lion, I might have felt differently.
Nice. That's good fun. But yeah, massive congratulations. But we must talk about something slightly more horse racing related now.
For sure.
Pinatubo.
Wow.
Speechless. He absolutely romped home in the national stakes at Curragh. What did you make of the performance?
It was scintillating. I mean, we obviously talked about the three-way showdown that didn't eventually materialise with Siskin rerouted to Newmarket. But in beating Armoury 9 lengths like he did, demolishing him in a Group 1, there's very few Group 1s, Josh, that are won like that, aren't there? In all honesty, I mean, take quality or whatever else out of the equation, you don't see Group 1s won in that style, and certainly not by two-year-olds at that stage of their career.
On the snaff.
Exactly.
Yeah, it could have been further. It really could have been further, I thought. It was so impressive. Almost looked like it was a maiden and just just a top class horse in a maiden, but it wasn't. It was a Grade One, and yeah, there was some performance. Rated 128.
I know, it's phenomenal. I mean,
that's like, higher than Frankel and Too Darn Hot.
I mean, 128, I would probably argue, is good enough at, even at this stage, to win a normal 2,000 guineas. And I'm hoping, is he going to go to the Dewhurst before his winter break or not?
I'm unsure. I've heard potentially he could go, but unsure. But hopefully he just trains on. That's all I'm. My eyes is firmly in the first week of May.
Of course. But it would be pretty cool to see him in the Dewhurst and over 7 furlongs up the Rolly Mile and see how he handles all that. And I mean, it would leave us all dreaming for the winter. Pretty, but to be on another note, Earthlight was very good the other day in the Middle Park as well. And what's incredible, I think they're both sons of Shamadal, who's having an immense season as a sire.
Definitely. I was impressed by him, actually. He looked very workmanlike and sort of did it fairly easily in the end. Mm. But yeah, impressed big time.
We just got to hope, as we said the other day, that they all turn up first weekend in May and we'll see who's the best. But
yeah, we can see who's
am starting to come over more and more to your way of thinking that Pinatubo looks pretty darn special. And hey, like you say, we hope he trains on and carries all before him next year.
Big time, big time, big time. There was some slight controversy on Twitter. I put a statement up saying that it could have been potentially a better performance than Frankel as a two-year-old. What did you make of that statement? Out of curiosity, because I know there was sort of mixed bag.
Well, I think if you're just looking for pure sort of impressive scintillating performance, I think I'd agree with you. I mean, Frankel was good in the Dewhurst. He wasn't as emphatic as Pinatubo was in winning the National Stakes. And look, I mean, maybe people will crab the form, but Armoury was a pretty solid horse. He's a Group 2 winner. And I mean, he was brushed aside like he was a selling plater, in all honesty, as in Pinatubo looked in a different league to them. And I think there's some sort of justification to your comment, to be honest. And that's what it's all about, isn't it, though, having opinions, as in we don't always have to agree. But I think in this case, look, as in it wasn't up there with Frankel's guineas demolition, but I would argue at this stage of his life, Pinatubo, he's got to be up there.
I think that's it. I think people may have misinterpreted the statement and thought that I was just comparing Pinatubo now to peak Frankel, which obviously is an outrageous thing to say, and that's not the case. But let's put that behind us. Pinatubo, mightily impressive. But we must reflect on the breaking news that's just come out yesterday that Toaster Racecourse, renowned for jumps racing, has announced its closure, and it's going to be selling all of its fixtures to the Arena Racing Company. Now, Charlie, Toaster was sort of a bit of a hunting ground for you. You got your most winners at a single race course at Toaster, 19.
Yep.
Sort of, how did you receive that news?
Personally, I was gutted. I mean, never mind that. Like, Toaster was also great at letting, well, local trainers, but whoever could come and gallop round the track the next morning. And so it was a phenomenal facility for all of us based around this area, around the area of Toaster, to utilise. And it did cater for certain horses. I mean, it wasn't always pretty to watch, but it was a perfect place for slow horses. And there's no doubt it will take away a lot of opportunities for those types. But we've been without it now for over a year. What concerns me with all of this sort of stuff is you start to look back at it, and it started with free entry into the racecourse, which at the time they were championing as a good thing because it was bringing more people in, more paying punters that then paid inside rather than on the gate. And then more concerning was we then had the Greyhound track, which actually took away a lot of the viewing down the hill, which I always loved when you go to Toaster to watch, that you could see right down the bottom from the grandstand. But we were reassured that having the Greyhound track would provide Toaster with the stability to go on for years to come. And also by them selling off a lot of their plum fixtures, including their Boxing Day one that I loved.
It wasn't just the Greyhound track, though. They had the Greyhound Derby there.
They did, yeah. I mean, and so it's all intents and purposes. You're thinking that this is it. And yes, as a purist, you might not like having the Greyhound track in the middle of the racecourse, but if it secures its long-term future, fantastic. And then the sad thing is, within a few years of that happening, maybe not even a few years, maybe it's less than that, my mind forgets me. We're now staring down the barrel of it will never, ever happen again, I don't think, because with them selling off the last of these fixtures, I see no way back. And my greatest concern is that what's going to happen to the land now? Do we just end up with it becoming another housing estate or what? I don't know. And I'm purely speculating, but it makes me very angry and very sad because Toaster was one of those proper grassroots racetracks that people could come to and enjoy a great day out without it costing a fortune. And it did provide opportunities for a certain type of horse.
Yeah. Why do you think it was renowned for slow horses? What was the test to Toaster which sort of made those horses?
I mean, it was quite unique in its way because you actually ran steeply downhill at one part of the track that you jumped the open ditch and the plain steeply downhill. And then you flattened up, but like most things in life, what goes down has to come up eventually or vice versa. And then from about 4.5 furlongs out, you were climbing sharply. You know, you would jump the ditch, which was the third last at the bottom of the hill, and then you'd have this steep, steep climb before you then gradually turned into the straight to face up to what was still a severe climb, but possibly a little bit less than at the back of the open ditch. And the ground was often incredibly soft through the middle of winter. I mean, I remember racing around there with almost standing water on the track, and Warren Marston said the greatest danger that day was shark attack because there was that much water. But it just made it was often a slog, and that combined with the characteristics of the track and its stiff nature and often soft ground meant that it often made slow motion finishing. But it did suit plenty of horses that would struggle for toe and pace on plenty of the modern tracks.
What was your favourite memory there?
I actually rode my claim out there on a horse called Tuca for a small trainer called Tony Middleton, who became a great mate of mine. That was a special day. And then, you know, I mean, of course, I'd won on Thomas Crapper there on a boxing day. And it was, again, a day that, to be honest, it wasn't really his sort of track at all. You know, soft ground, he didn't always love, and real stiff nature and finish. But it was just, again, a day where he was a lot better than you often get of quality around the track, and he won as he liked. And so those sort of memories will stick with me. But some grand old horses as well, like that were just big, slow chasers that I was renowned with probably throughout my career, pushing and shoving away a long way out, like some of Robin's horses, Atherston Hill, and I'm trying to think of other names like right off the top of my head. But I loved those sort of tests when it was hard work, horses needed to jump and stay well, and that suited me ideally. So Toaster had a lot of happy memories for me.
I sort of unfortunately couldn't speak about a riding memory there, but obviously one of my memories that I did have at the course was actually AP's 4,000th winner,
yeah.
Mountain Tunes. The house came down that day. I remember JP sort of got everyone on the track a drink, didn't he? That was some moment.
One of the great sporting moments, to be honest. And again, that's where jump racing in is magic, because you've got this small little track in a quiet little countryside town, and you end up with an iconic sporting moment because it was delivered as well in typical AP fashion, wasn't it? I think Jamie Moore's on Crispin at the top of my head of Kerry Lee's looked like he was going to win comfortably going to the last. AP had made AP's Mountain Tunes, was it?
Yeah.
Had made a mistake at the second last. Looked like victory was gone.
It was a classic.
Yeah.
McCoy ride.
And he went into overdrive. But going back to that also is where the track helped, because then all of a sudden the stamina started ebbing away, maybe on Crispin. Mountain Tunes hits overdrive, AP cannot be denied, and we end up with this magic moment that we're seeing replayed over and over again because of the closure of the track. And I mean, I think I was riding there that day, and it was one of the few days where I wasn't sort of desperate to get home, and I got changed and waited round, and I think he had a few rides early in the day that got beat as well. And so you were just
I think
praying.
It was like a couple of favourites as well.
Yeah, you were praying that it was going to happen there. And I remember Robert Bellamy, who was clerk of the course at the time, and Keith, the head groundsman, and all these. You know, for them, it was a special moment because it was a day that the whole media spotlight descended on Toaster. And it would have been a real shame for that sort of track to have missed out on their moment in the sun. And it all came together, like you say, in true AP fashion. And a special, special day. I mean, I think I read somewhere it might have even cost JP 25 grand at the bar or something, buying everyone a drink. But they're magic moments, aren't they?
Yeah, it was one of the finest moments I've ever seen, personally, on a race course. Obviously, devastating news about Toaster. Hopefully, we wish somehow the racecourse will make a recovery in some way. But we are going to move on to a very, very big race this weekend. Sort of the main topic of this podcast, it's the Arc de Triomphe. And this isn't just an Arc de Triomphe. This is Enable's hat-trick bid. She's won it the last 2 years. No horse has ever won three in a row. No horse ever won three. She is very short price favourite. Can you see past her?
Personally, not in a month of Sundays.
Well, let's talk about some of the other rivals. Sort of the unknown quantity in the race is Gayath for Charlie Appleby. He was a mighty 14-length winner in Germany. But that didn't really look the strongest race. What did you make of that?
Again, you're talking about a performance that on the face of it looked mightily impressive, but how would you not have fancied Enable to have demolished them over there in that sort of quality? I mean, taking nothing away from a German Group 1.
It didn't look the strongest.
No, and they go there for a reason, don't they? And it's often pinpointed by very, very capable trainers, Charlie Appleby included, to go and find the Group 1 winner with possibly a horse lacking actual, you know, top European Group 1 ability. Now, Gayath is talked about in glowing terms by William Buick and Charlie Appleby, and maybe they were looking at it. It was a nice way to get a comfortable win and in a Group 1 before going on to peak performance in the Arc. And so you've got to rank him as a contender. I just think as it stands right now, his form is surely way short of Enable's best.
I think I never like to look at a horse winning that easily, especially on the flat. No. I sort of like a tough performance where you're going away at the line. And I think in a Group 1, that's more encouraging, especially in a huge field it's going to be with a strongly run race. That's more encouraging to me. I didn't like the fact that it was almost just a demolition job. I don't think he's to me. Aidan O'Brien has got two in the race. He's got Magical, but sort of the obvious chance is Japan, who won the Judmont.
I find it very hard to see beyond those two. We'll move on to them in a minute, and you could possibly put Skatas, I think that's how they pronounce it, into the mix.
Skatas.
Yeah, but I mean, Japan is the main danger, isn't he? He's got to be. He's a Royal Ascot winner. He won his Group 1 in France, the Grand Prix de Paris, and then he's gone and won a Judmont International and won it nicely from a very, very good horse in Crystal Ocean. So he is the improver. We've spoke before about how glowingly Ryan Moore talks about him. And he, for me, is the major obstacle between Enable and Immortality. But, I mean, I'm praying as a sports fan that doesn't happen. Enable gets the treble up and retires as one of the best ever. And then we can all debate about where she ranks amongst these absolute greats.
I agree. I'm not a huge fan of flat racing in general. Sotsass is an interesting horse. You know slightly more about him than me.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a French Derby winner, which you have to respect, you know, and he beat a good yardstick in Persian King on that day. He's then gone on from there and won the Prix Niel, which often has been the best French trial for the Arc de Triomphe. He's trained by Jean-Claude Rouget, who's a fantastic operator, had so many good horses over the years. And again, he is talking him up big time. So it would be silly to say he can't win. And he definitely is one of a select few that I would say are contenders. But I do think they've all got to raise their game quite a few notches to lower Enable's colours, personally.
I personally don't even feel this is Enable's hardest Arc. I think last year, CF Class potentially was the biggest challenger. I think he'd if Enable was not in the race on Sunday and he was going off Fav, I think he'd be almost as certain as Enable.
For sure. And you made an interesting point about the size of the field. And much as it will be a big field this year, I think there's only 12 confirmed on Monday. So we're not going to end up with a situation like 18 runners, like I think last year might have been. So I would have thought for Frankie Dettori, it brings the draw way less into it than can sometimes be the case in this race. So I'd have thought he will be able to ride her however he wants to. And hopefully she's just drawn somewhere in the middle. You can get a good handy pitch, ride her nice and simple, turn into the straight, away she goes, the treble's up, and I'll be cheering the roof off if it does happen.
I definitely will be doing the same, and I'm so envious of everyone that's going to be at Longchamp in Paris on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Racing Riot team would have flown us out there to do a live broadcast. I mean, what's going on here?
Absolutely devastating. We need to sort that out. That is disgusting behaviour, isn't it?
Well, I think there's going to have to be words, because I'd have thought by this stage, the fourth show, surely we've shown enough that we deserve business class or whatever, private jet even, out to Longchamp, watch history be made, and tell our listeners how it happened live from the track.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. But sort of to get a little bit more insight, we've got a guest on the show today, Rab Havlin. He is John Gosden's second jockey, and he's also their main work rider. I'm very much looking forward to speaking to him. Let's go over to him now. Hi, Rab. It's brilliant to have you on. Obviously, it's a huge week ahead of the Arc. How is the stable feeling?
Everybody's really excited, but obviously we're nervous. We're on tender hooks, but all in a good way, and everything's positive.
Obviously, enables such an incredible mare. She's going for a third Arc. No horse has ever done that. How is she doing?
She's fine, yeah. Obviously, we've done the race course gallop. We're all pretty pleased. And then we galloped again on Monday on the grass, which she likes on the line towns, getting a toe in a bit. And she actually led the gallop. I sat second. My instructions were to sort of creep to her at the 5.5 and get her some company, but actually gone past the 5. she sort of lost me by then, and it was good to see her go clear.
And Rab, is that pretty standard on the Monday before a big race for John Gosden to just do a little bit with the horses like that?
No, well, really, it was probably the last opportunity we were going to get on the grass, because there was a deluge of rain forecast, so, he sort of preempted it. And, I mean, the filly's fit, she's back on her racing weight, and we just wanted to get one more bit, and preferably we wanted it to be on the grass, and that was the opportunity we had. So we just keep it ticking away nicely now, and it's all sort of fitted into place.
Nice. And I just wondered, just for our listeners and that, like, what's she like at home? As in, you look at stars like Frankel, who always seem to be on edge. But I just wonder, what's her personality like at home?
Look, she can be, she's absolutely lovely out there, but when she's fresh, she can whip round. And, she's had poor Imran hanging a few times in the early spring, but as a rule, normally when she's out the box, she's as good as gold, goes around where he is, pricks. She's a presence around her, and she knows that everybody's at in the gallop to watch her, but a little bit different in the box. She can be a little bit of a diva. I mean, she's very, very intelligent. She hates staying in first slot. If she ever, has to stay in by first slot, she can sense it. She sees people tacking up around her, and she has a little bit of a diva stroke and kicks her hay and her shavings around the place, and lets you know she's not happy about it.
Awesome. I love that. And just going to play a devil's advocate here, because I think she's unbeatable, and I think she'll win and win well on Sunday. Just if John Gosden had ran Stradivarius, would he have posed any threat to her, do you think, or not?
Well, Stradivarius is a great horse in his own right.
Yeah.
In his divisions and in his staying divisions, he's got that speed that he can take care of the stayers, because he's got a burst of speed. But she's a burst of speed.
Yeah.
As she showed, when she even dropped back to 1.25 in the Eclipse, she's got so much cruising speed. And it's a different story when you're taking on stairs to taking on, proper Group 1 horses. I think I was looking the other day, she's beaten 43 individual Group 1 winners.
It's incredible.
So, that's some incredible statistic. And, the horses around her at the minute are no slouches by any means, and it's not going to be any walk in the park, but I don't think he would have posed too much a danger to her this year.
Fair enough.
I've got to ask you about Logician after his impressive romp in the Ledger. Do you think he could potentially sort of fill the empty space if Enable was to retire at the end of the season?
It'd be nice to think so. He's a horse that's been a slow learner, a slow developer. By no means do I think he's going to be, he won the Ledger over 1.6 miles, but I actually think he could come back. I mean, if it was soft ground, I think he could come back to being a horse of the champion stakes at the back end of next year. You know, he travels along. He nearly travelled too well in the St. Ledger. But he's that type of horse, and he hasn't stopped improving yet. And you know, the boss does well with that type, and he'll have the time he needs and another winter on his back. He's going to be stronger and quicker next year.
That's awesome. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Legician next year. I just, another horse that I really like, just going back to how horses look like they can be slightly fragile and immature mentally, is King of Comedy Rab. And you know, he always seems to be running through the bridle in his races and stuff. And I just wondered how far you thought he could go if he matures and relaxes a bit more in his races.
Yeah, he needs to put everything together in his head. He's a horse with a lot of raw ability. But he's never been straightforward, and you know, in New York and in the Judmont, he was just too keen. But to his credit, he still ran well.
Yeah.
And then the last day, I didn't think he really come into the dip that well. He always carries his head a little bit high, but he, you know, obviously the winner's you know, a very, very good horse and has won a number of Group Ones, you know, overseas. But I didn't think the track really suited him at Newmarket last day. And if he stays in training, you know, if we can get everything to work properly, he's definitely got the engine.
Nice.
The wealth of talent that must come through Clarehaven must be immense. Do you sort of get more of a buzz riding out like the exciting, well-bred two-year-olds, almost compared to the top seasoned horses?
It's always good when you ride, because most of these two, we bring them along really slowly, and they can fly under the radar for quite a bit of time, and they'll win the novices. They're classy enough to do that, and then go and win a novice with a penalty. But every good horse takes one big leap forward, and it's nice if you're on board when they do that, and you think, oh my God, this is something special. So that's happened a number of times over the years, and that's always a special point, you know.
I can imagine that is a serious buzz. You actually, funnily enough, rode Kate Palace on debut at Newcastle, and he looked like a really good type. And it sort of got a lot of people raving about him, particularly as Gosden sent both Enable and Stradivarius down the same route. And you rode them both there too. Kate Palace obviously lost his next race, but how well is he sort of regarded around the yard?
Yeah, he's an exciting horse for next year. When I won on him at Newcastle, I thought he was possibly a mile this year. He'd be best seen to a mile. And obviously, Palace Pier, we thought, you know, the horse that won at Sandow, we thought he could be the quicker one of the two. But he just, I don't know what happened, really. Frankie said he got a little bit lit up at Newbury, and we just needed to step back off him again and give him the winter off. I think I can see him being sort of a mile and a quarter, middle distance horse next year, but he's definitely got a lot of ability.
I just wanted to move away from the horses now, Rab, and just touch about you, because like, we're trying to integrate our viewers into the people within the sport. I mean, I was counting up on the train down today. You've had 960 British winners in your career, and 451 of them have been for John Gosden. Like, that's a pretty special relationship in this day and age. And why do you think it is so strong? And what's enabled it, excuse the pun, to last as long as it has?
Probably the same way that makes John Gosden a fantastic trainer. He's a very patient trainer, and he's a very person with people. So I'd say that's probably done to a lot of it. But yeah, I've been there for nearly 20 years now, and we get on well. And you know, I know how he likes his horses ridden, and things seem to tick along in the mornings and in the afternoon. And you know, he's just a nice person to be around. You know, he cares about you off the track and on the track, and he's always got your best interests. And I couldn't see myself being anywhere else.
He always comes across. I love listening to him talk about, well, racing, but about anything really. And for me, I think when it was all over, it'd be fantastic if he could do something towards the BHA, because I think he talks so much sense about racing and the direction it should be moving in. He's a man that really needs tapping into almost even more, do you not think?
Well, he cares about our sport, you know, and he wants to, you know, he's always thinking about the direction we should be going in the sport. And I mean, for a man that you know, trains so many horses, to have, you know, to take that on board and still want to help the sport, if anything, and everybody else in it. And and the longevity of the sport. I mean, he's a master of all trades, really, isn't he?
Absolutely, mate. And he always seems like such a cool character. Just tell us, in the morning, does he ever lose it when things aren't going quite right?
He never shouts. I don't think I've ever heard him shout. He's never, even when I was younger and we get bollockings, they were never bollockings, they were just sticking and staying talking to us. I think that's, he's never wanted to lose his cool.
That's an incredible measure of the man. But it's like I say, mate, it's also testament to you that you're such a huge part of the team. And to be honest, every bit as integral as Frankie and all the others, because the way he speaks about you is always glowingly as well.
Well, I'm just lucky to be in the position that I am, and it's all thanks to him and his owners. And we've got a great big team there. It's one big family, and a lot of us have been there for sort of 19, 20 years. So, that in itself brings around a kind of comfortableness with each other and what part each other plays, you know.
Yeah, thank you very much for speaking to us. It's been a great pleasure. We wish you all the very best of luck with Enable. We hope you have a brilliant sort of end to the season and also a great few seasons ahead. Thank you very much for joining us, Rab.
Well, Josh, that was phenomenal speaking to Rab. And never mind just Enable, what an insight into John Gosden's yard, the stars that are amongst it, and the working routine and what kind of man John Gosden is. So, for me, I think all that's left to say is let's really hope that come Sunday, Enable's the heroine, she gets the treble up, and history is made.
Come on, Enable. Come on, Frankie. Now, I'm going to leave you on a potentially controversial statement. I feel if Enable is to win on Sunday, that Frankie Dettori may retire.
There and then?
I think he may retire this season. I've got a little theory about it. It's his absolute best year so far. So many Group 1s. He would go out on the absolute peak if Enable rode three arcs. My thinking is he either goes out on Sunday if she does win, or Champions Day on Stradivarius. He's at the top of his game. All greats go out on the top. McCoy did it. Ruby did it.
I don't think he's going to do it anyway, because I thought that I read somewhere that he wanted a ride against his oldest boy in a race, and I'm not sure that that's happened yet. So I don't see any reason for him to stop. I think he's going to carry on for a bit longer yet. In fact, why don't we have a few quid on it?
Fortunately, can't promote too much gambling. But thank you very much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure. Great to have Rab speaking to us. Obviously, make sure you get involved in the Racing Riot Members Club. It's obviously a free trial. It's great stuff on there. We'll see you next week. This has been Josh and obviously co-host Charlie, and we'll see you for the next Racing Riot.